Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hey everybody, welcome to this new edition of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I'm Coach Al Lyman, once again joined by my partner, Dr. Kurt Strecker. And as I always like to say prior to talking about the weather, I say, Doc, how are you today?
I'm just fine, Coach. Thanks very much. Awesome. We're here in sunny Old Saybrook, Connecticut.
We've
got a special guest in studio with us.
In studio.
Live and in person. Our special guest today is Mr. Jan Roos.
Jan Roos from Vitality Sciences. Jan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I hope I'm not jacking your weather conversation right now, but you know, a little bit too sunny for me. I ended up getting burned this weekend.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's never enough sun for me, as evidenced by all my skin damage. So when you get to be my age, you unfortunately got to pay the piper with that, you know. But nah, man, the sun is awesome. But you know, some folks love being in Seattle because they don't always want to see it, right? Portland, Oregon. In the Northwest, you don't see a lot of sun, so everybody's a little different. In any case, it's great to have you here. Jan, you're with a company, the co-founder of a company, Vitality Sciences. And I believe your primary focus is an amino acid product that you target perhaps for endurance athletes. And we're going to talk about this product in detail during the podcast. Just a quick background before I let you talk to our listeners and explain, you know, your background and connection with the company and so forth and so on. You and I had an opportunity to meet back in March at the Trimania Multisport Expo and Conference up in Cambridge. I was up there speaking, and you were there in the expo. And I had an athlete there that I coach who suggested I go over and see you. And interestingly, Doc and I have had some conversations with athletes, and we've discussed various amino acid supplemental programs and products on the podcast before, because there's a number of products out there, probably MAP or MAP being the most well known. So you and I had a chance to chat then, and I enjoyed talking with you, and I invited you to come onto our podcast to give our listeners a chance to learn a little bit more, because you know, a lot of the folks that are listening are runners who are running the marathon or longer distance, and certainly triathletes, endurance athletes as a whole, are looking for that edge, right? Whatever they can do to resist fatigue, go further and go a little faster, and clearly supplementing with amino acids and perhaps branched chain amino acids in particular is a topic that has been discussed at length in various forms for many years. So all of that being said, here you are.
That's true. Here I am.
All right. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Vitality Sciences.
How did you get involved with the company? Where did it start?
Okay. So I'm actually the co-founder of Vitality Sciences. We ended up starting the company about a year ago. We've had the product in the market. So obviously, there was a little bit of time before we ended up launching, which was last June. But I'm actually partnered. It's a family business. My partner in the company is actually my father. But we kind of have a dynamic duo going on right now. He's more on the sourcing side. He has a background in biotech and pharmaceuticals. So that allows us to do some interesting things from a supply chain perspective, which I can get into a little bit later. But I'm sort of more the person who's closer to the market. I'm sort of the marketing guy. I'm more of an athlete than he is. I've been semi-obsessively focused on nutrition since a very young age. I'm actually a certified nutritionist with the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and that's sort of where my expertise fits into this whole company.
Sounds great. What is Vitality Sciences? I mean, what do you do? What do you make?
Okay, so we are focused on super premium amino acid products right now. Our flagship product is a formula called Myathon. It's focused on the 8 essential amino acids, and we source from some of the top quality producers in the world. So one of the big differences is a lot of the supplements on the market, actually, they come from a small group of suppliers. A lot of these are in Southeast Asia. And there's a million supplement companies out there, as I'm sure you guys know. But the thing is that a lot of people know that they're all sourcing from some of the same factories that are coming in China. And most of the amino acids in particular are being sourced from keratin. So that's usually a byproduct of agriculture and animal husbandry. A lot of times it's not exactly, you know, prime rib that's going into these. Sometimes it's animal waste. But we have a completely different supply chain. We actually are in touch with, there's only 3 companies in the world that make amino acid for medical use. And this is for stuff like recovery, hospital IVs, people who go into surgery, stuff like that. And we're actually sourcing our amino acids from companies like those instead of the ones that most of the industry is using.
All right, good stuff. Doc, what are your thoughts?
I think one of the things, why did you go into amino acids? What's special about that? What do you want to tell everybody about that?
Okay, well, here, I mean, my perspective on amino acids is it's something that there was a big problem in the market and we didn't really see being served. I mean, less of the nutrition, less in the endurance market. I mean, there's some good products there, but specifically in more of the sports performance market, CrossFit, more of the glycolytic side of things, just because of those sourcing problems. But I mean, circling back to why amino acids, I mean, when we're talking about recovery, there's basically the 80-20 of that whole thing is sleep and nutrition. Would you guys agree?
Those are important.
Yeah. So from the nutrition perspective, especially when we're talking about pre, post, and during workout nutrition, there's basically 2 things that most people are concerned about and what most people should be concerned about. And the most important things are protein and carbohydrates. But going a little bit further, any protein is a combination. It'll eventually break down to 23 amino acids. And there's a certain amount of those amino acids. Those are known as the essential amino acids that are the major determinants of what the effect is on muscle growth and repair. So why we focused on that was because we had something that, I mean, there's a lot of carbohydrate products out there. There's a lot of protein products out there. But we were trying to take an amino acid-based approach to solving the protein problem for athletes.
And what specifically do you identify as the protein problem?
It's difficult to get protein when your body needs it. So, I mean, everyone's really familiar with taking stuff like whey protein or, you know, glass of chocolate milk after work, after your workout. But the thing is that a lot of people don't understand the process of digestion that takes your body needs to take in order to break that protein down into the constituent amino acids. It takes longer than putting in your mouth, and you're not all of a sudden flooding your blood with amino acids immediately. So sometimes that can take, you know, 2, sometimes 8 hours. I mean, a good example of this is, you know, somebody's a very popular thing. Just some people say all you need to do, drink some chocolate milk after workout, which is great. And I don't deny that it's a great source of protein. But when you're talking about amino acids, if you have 8 or 9 grams of protein in milk, 80% of that's going to be casein. And basically you're looking at 5 or 6 grams of essential amino acids spread over a period of 8 hours. So that really starts to limit the amount of protein synthesis that can be taking place when your body needs it, which is immediately after a workout. So having pure amino acids basically increases the amount that's available for stuff like muscle protein synthesis. And I mean, there's some of the research that's shown that the closer that you can get to this to a workout, the greater the response is, which is like, you know, it makes complete sense from a biochemical perspective, because the more materials you have, the faster the reaction is.
I'm glad you mentioned research. You know, I think if you look at the research that's out there that's been done on amino acid supplementation, there seems to be really a paucity of evidence there. And I think in many cases, these are, you know, N of 4, N of 6 kind of studies. And very few of them have been done well, in my opinion, in the arena of endurance athletes. Do you have studies that would support that in another way?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, look, there's only so far that you can get with getting the perfect study for any given demographic. I mean, the fact of the matter is that most of the studies that get conducted at almost any research university are mostly for untrained undergraduates, right? People who are looking for course credit that are trying to get it. So, I mean, to have something that's specifically done for endurance athletes, it's great to have. But the reality is that we kind of have to stick with this basic research and connect the dots on a lot of different things sometimes. I mean, there's biochemical pathways that we can understand, and we can kind of combine that with different research on, you know, we know that protein is made out of amino acids, and we know that there's certain studies that relate the fast burning proteins versus slow digesting proteins, and there's big differences in the protein synthesis. So knowing the fact that you can have amino acids, that's essentially what's going to determine the protein response. You're basically looking at amino acids now versus amino acids later. So, I mean, in terms of whether I can have the exact study that replicates what my product does versus other stuff, it's, you know, it's not there. And the fact of the matter is that for most supplement companies, it's really tough to get, you know, pharma level research or the stuff that most people are used to for getting something that you'd get prescribed by a doctor or something like that. Because the fact of the matter is that most of the supplement company can't place, you know, I can't place a protein, I can't place a patent on an amino acid. So we could do a lot of research, but it's not likely that as a business we'd be able to make it back. So it's just not realistic from an economic perspective for most supplement companies to be able to conduct research like that.
You know, as we're talking about this topic, you know, I'm reminded if I'm sitting here as a coach, I'm really looking at this topic of amino acid supplementation really from two points of view. Number one, what are the real reasons why I as a coach would suggest to an athlete that I coach that they should supplement with amino acids, you know, for whatever reason, to enhance recovery, to enhance adaptation. You know, looking at that objectively, that's the first thing. What are the reasons for supplementation? And two, how does one distinguish from one product to the next out there in the marketplace? You know, it's so interesting to me. You know, I've been doing this for a really long time, Jan, and there were many, many years where I was using Hammer Nutrition Fuels for some of the long racing I was doing. And I thought they made some pretty good products, you know, predominantly maltodextrin-based fuels. But they have a whole assortment of supplements in addition to those fuels, and a lot of hype surrounding the importance of consuming any one of numbers of those products, you know, and, you know, articles that would say that you need to supplement cytochrome C or you're simply not going to PR in your next race and you're going to run out of energy. And the truth of the matter is that there is really very little research, real science to back up many of the claims that they made. Interestingly, as you've pointed out here, you know, finding and putting together the right studies, who pays for them, you know, what is the agenda behind so much of the study? It's really, really hard, right? And so every athlete out there is having to make common sense choices and decisions. And again, the challenge comes, you know, what is the real reason for why I get better and how I perform? You know, years ago, when an athlete would come to me and say, should I take supplement A, B, or C? And in most instances, I would ask them this question. I'd say, listen, if you go out and you race this weekend and you take supplement A and you have a great race, you're now faced with believing that you've got to take supplement A every single time you race from that point forward.
You're stuck with it.
You're stuck with it, right? And especially if you go out to the next race and you don't perform well and you didn't take supplement A, you just became a lifelong purchaser of that product. What if you went out and you did a race and you took supplement A and you had a terrible race or a less than perfect race or a less than, you know, race where you performed less than what, you know, to your potential? Was it taking supplement A that caused that to happen? With supplementation of any kind comes a huge plethora of questions that can come out of that supplementation. We have athletes that walk into our lab all the time and they go, you know, and when I say all the time, let's just say it's happened frequently. We see them in a pair of shoes and we remark about, hey, that's a new pair of shoes. And they go, yeah, I ran a PR this past weekend, you know, a new PR in a 5K. Man, the shoes are great. And then we go, you know, jokingly, we think you ran, right? Not your shoes, right? It was, you know, give yourself some credit here, you know? It wasn't your shoes that achieved the 5K PR, the half marathon PR. It was you. And in most instances, these are athletes that we know have been doing the work. So one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you onto the podcast, and, you know, listen, man, I know you got your stick, your spiel. I know you believe in your product. But my goal here is to let's drill this down to some really important elements for the listeners out there and give them as much evidence and information as we can as to what the real deal is here, because they're going to be left with questions anyway. You know, should they supplement with amino acids? Under what conditions or situations would it be more appropriate? And what distinguishes your product from another product? And before I let you jump back in, I'm going to ask a very, very simple question, which occasionally someone asks me. If I'm eating well, and I won't define eating well by analyzing how many grams of protein or carbohydrate or fat I'm getting in my diet, but let's just say I'm eating pretty well, pretty healthfully from a variety of sources, and I'm getting what I believe is adequate protein in my diet on a daily basis, and I have a pool of amino acids that comes from a variety of sources, why would I think that adding more amino acids, particularly after a workout, when my body's got a lot of metabolic responsibilities at that point in time, should enhance my recovery, assuming I have an adequate pool of those amino acids present in my body?
Okay, well, to answer that question first, defining an adequate pool is really, you know, there's no quote-unquote pool of amino acids. And this is something we talked about a little bit at Trimania, I remember, and I went back and looked into it. So the fact is that the pool of amino acids are not stored within the body. So any pool of amino acids is basically the result of what amino acids have been absorbed into your bloodstream from the amount of food that you've eaten in that day up until that point. So, you know, if it's you could try to predict it by taking, you know, some sort of fractional, but that's really basically way too complicated. But I think there's other things that the research has proved that even at rest, having more amino acids, it's called a hyperaminoacidemia, which is a kind of complicated word for no reason, but that's actually been shown to influence muscle synthesis at rest even. But yeah, that's the thing. Basically, it's rate of reaction. So it's the more amino acids that you have in a plate, even if it's adequate, if there's more amino acids that are needed, it's going to have a faster rate of synthesis. And in that critical post-workout window, that's when most of the recovery and the prevention of breakdown is going to be happening as well. So that's why it would be important to have amino acids, even if you have adequate protein in your diet. That being said, people who have more adequate protein in their diet may or may not respond to this as well as people who might be lacking. I mean, we have some really great responses from vegans, but at the end of the day, and this is something that I think we were kind of trending towards before, it's really an experiment of one that's done with you. And I mean, if you think it's a good idea to talk about it, I think there's a lot of ways that people can be able to do something like that and make it rigorous, because we sort of have an issue, right? Like the thing is that any sort of animal, ourselves included, we're designed to look at patterns between causes and effects. So the same way that, you know, the old story about Pavlov's dog, at some point through their life experience, they decided that, okay, whenever I hear this bell, it's dinner time, right? So it's the same thing like that runner who had a good race on the supplement, right? He's going to be looking for a connection between that and another thing. So what the best thing to do is to be able to take it to a point where you can personally have a rigorous evaluation of something, like whether it's a supplement or whether it's a pair of shoes or whether it's something you do. And basically, the fact of the matter is, the longer the time frame is and the more you can control for other variables, the more valid that something like that's going to be. And the big problem that I find with most people is that it's really, really tough to control variables. So the thing is that most people don't go through a pretty rare, I mean, it's some coaches make a point of incorporating this in the practice. Mutual friend Will Carusis is really into this. But it's not everyone that goes ahead and measures their metrics, whether it's run times, whether it's heart rate, whether it's, you know, objective measures of soreness, stuff like that. So the first step to performing an experiment on yourself is to have that data and start taking that stuff rigorously. And then from that point forward, it's about changing one thing. And a big issue comes up is that people sometimes get on these tips, and I'm sure you guys can confirm this with your own practice, but when people are trying to throw it all at them, so they're going to get their new shoes, they're going to get their new supplements, they're going to try sleeping 9 hours a night instead of seven, they're going to try to throw everything and throw the kitchen sink at it. And then at the point, you might have a good result, but you're not going to really be able to isolate what it was that caused that. So in the process of self-experimentation, it's just a matter of keeping things rigorous and being able to test things one at a time. So whether it's, one dose is probably not a good way to tell whether any supplement works. It's a good indicator of whether you're going to be an immediate responder to it. But the farther you can test, and the more time you can get in, and also making sure that you keep every other variable in control. Don't change the way you're doing workouts and expect it to be something different, because what change in the workout could have the results instead of the supplement you're taking. So staying rigorous, people can, regardless of whether the research is ample or not, they can really be in a position where they can use the scientific method to establish things for themselves. And that's, I think, the future of deciding to supplement and personal performance in medicine today.
I think the longer you test one of those, that hypothesis, is this supplement working for me, the harder time you're going to have controlling for variables. I think you're, we ask people who leave here on a Thursday to do two exercises between Thursday and Tuesday, and they can't get it done. So to ask somebody to objectively come up with that kind of information is, I think you'd have a heck of a time really controlling for it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from a coaching perspective, there's an ideal world, and the ideal world is that athlete is keeping detailed information and the metrics are there, But real world is a little bit different, real world, and again, I think your approach, Jan, here and what you're trying to convey, I think is certainly valid. But, what comes into play, I know for me, even on a weekly basis, if one night or two nights the dogs upstairs are barking a little bit more than normal, there goes my night's sleep. Or something happens and things get skewed in one direction or another.
It becomes stress at work.
Yeah, it becomes really difficult to control for those variables, that's for sure, even in controlled settings, it's hard.
Yeah.
Not to say that you can't glean some reactions or information, but really dialing it in is extraordinarily difficult. Certainly in our work here in our lab, and Doc, you alluded to it to some degree, what we found as a company that's predominantly about movement quality first and foremost, but most importantly about overall a very holistic approach to good health and performance, is getting people to, to use that adage you mentioned earlier, 80-20, to get people to focus 80% of their energy and time on the most basics and fundamentals. And certainly, if you can get people to eat well most of the time and sleep a half decent number of hours, a night, and execute smart training, you're 80% of the way there. So anyway.
I think, I might have missed the question, because the other thing is we took a step back there just talking about, personal experimentation and stuff like that. But yeah, specifically bring it more focus into amino acids again. Why people would want to take amino acids is basically it's mostly related to your muscles. That's the 80% of what it does. I mean, you can find effects on, maintaining everything from hormonal status during planned overtraining to, everything else. But for the most part, it's muscles. And there's something that I think there's a bit of a fear of that in the endurance community. Of course, there's negatives to being too much weight. But the thing is that the same cellular process of taking your muscle cell and hypertrophying it or repairing it, it's the same process. So the same stuff that would take, a bodybuilder would be focusing on to get their muscles super big is the same sort of stuff that's going to work to have your muscles recover if you're doing, a sprint ladder or something like that. So the major gauge of where you can tell how these things are working is usually muscle soreness. And the reason that this is it's a tangible thing that you can affect. It's subjective, we could have better markers than that, but it's something that everyone can usually do. And the reason for this is because the actual cause of soreness is not, a lot of people think it's lactic acid still, which is, we've gone way past that in the research, but it's actually damage to the proteins that are holding your muscles together, literally. So it's just literally structural damage. And the soreness is a result of inflammation, which is a response to that. So a lot of that is caused by protein catabolism. But providing amino acids in the immediate, during, and post-workout window is able to minimize that in a way that's tangible for a lot of people. So generally speaking, if you're having trouble with soreness, and we found a couple patterns that people get this a lot. So it's usually people who are either starting something for the first time, people who are coming back after a long layup, or people who are trying to take their training to a level of intensity that hasn't been previously. That's usually when it's a good time to start looking at a product like this. And yeah, that's basically it's when your muscles are pushed to do things that they haven't done before is when it's good to do stuff like this.
Yeah, no question. I mean, obviously, soreness is going to be a bigger factor when you're starting something for the first time. You know, and over time, your body's going to adapt if it's running to the impact stress associated with running. And if that soreness went down over time, I don't think it would be because of consuming an amino acid product. It might be because of adaptation. And it might also be because of, that athlete is stable or not stable. You know, how much stress or compensation exists in one area of the body because another area of the body is maybe not doing what it should do. Again, my point in mentioning that is not to shoot holes in your arguments, but to point out the simple fact that there's so many variables at play when we look at soreness and the level of it in individual athlete. I was consulting this morning with a member of our team who ran a half marathon this past weekend. And she, for a variety of reasons, became pretty severely dehydrated. And so much so that she had a pretty severe headache after the race was over that lasted for quite some time. And in my experience, that level of dehydration results in a heightened level of muscle soreness after a race. So there's just one factor, you know, that that can certainly contribute to it. So
I can totally agree with that too. I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, look, I'm not saying that the products we produce are a magic pill. I mean, it's called a supplement for a reason. This isn't the base of the pyramid. You can't eat enough of an amino acid product to make up for 9 hours of sleep. And if we
you
could
told
do that,
me it was going to get rid of my gray hair, man. Come on now.
I'm working on it. Yeah, but look, if I could...
Keratin, baby, right there. Spread it around like chia seeds.
Yeah, but look, if I could, if I was the company that made the 9 hours of sleep in a pill, I'd be chilling out with Richard Branson on Necker Island right now.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of athletes that I know of, or at least speak about consuming these amino acid supplements during exercise. What are your thoughts about that, and what's your experience with that?
Yeah, so some of the coaches that we've worked with, specifically at the longer distances, it becomes kind of tough because, like, I know you guys say this on the podcast a lot. When you get to the ultra long distances, it's an eating contest. And we have actually one. He's pretty crazy. He's a USA cycling and USA triathlon coach. He actually chews them, which I would not recommend just from a taste perspective. I mean, right. But no, it completely makes sense because
he chews them.
Yeah, he actually chews them. He's crazy. I mean,
you can't mention his name.
All
right, you better keep it quiet. We don't want to boost his business on our podcast.
That's right.
To the West Coast, anyways. You guys don't have anything to worry about. Yeah.
It's gotta be Lucho. No, actually, I don't know. He's a Ben. He's a map guy.
I'm keeping a poker face. Yeah. He actually was an ex map bike guy, but he moved. Anyways. Getting off track. But so basically, when we talk about the amino acid pool as what's in your bloodstream as a result of the digestion that's taking place in that day, that's more likely to get depleted as muscles broken down on longer races like this. So it makes sense, and we usually recommend for people who are doing, we usually, the cutoff for this is about 4 hours, because we say usually if you're going to take it 4 hours or longer, you're going to have to start looking at taking doses like this every 2 hours. And there's also research that shows that taking amino acids before a workout can sometimes prevent breakdown and increase synthesis more than taking it immediately after a workout. So carrying this through to having a point where you're taking it in the middle of the workout would also just keep that amino acid pool in the blood up, and then you're preventing the breakdown and dynamically making these things prevent from breaking down and synthesizing on the spot, rather than waiting for a huge meal at the end of it to undo all the damage that's been done.
Right. So that's good stuff. Thank you, Jan. As I think about your product, Myathon, right? Is that how it's pronounced? What is actually contained in it? And talk a little bit about your dosing recommendations, because there's certainly, I would think, whatever research exists And any kind of anecdotal evidence is going to point to some dosing recommendations. What are your thoughts? Naturally, you're the company that's making them, so high dose. No, take them all.
We actually recommend a lower dose than some of our competitors, Matt being one of them. We usually recommend athletes take 5 to start out with, and then calibrate up or down as needed.
Basically. 5 of what?
5, it would be tablets. That's what it comes in, and they're 1,000 milligram tablets. As far as what's in it, we have a blend of the 8 essential amino acids. So that actually includes the branched-chain amino acids. Each branched-chain amino acid is essential. But the reason that we do that is because it's the amino acid content of a protein is what is the biggest determinant of the muscle synthesis response. So we contain all of 8 of the amino acids. It's leucine, isoleucine. I got myself in a hole right here. Yeah. Valine, yeah. Phenylalanine, tryptophan, threonine, methionine, and lysine. We don't include histidine. That's, you know, arguably conditionally essential. If you're an infant, then, you know, this isn't the product for you. But yeah, so it's all those. It's a super high dose. And the thing is that we don't have any filler agents. And this is just a good tip for, I mean, even if you never think about getting our product. It's really important for people to look when it comes to proprietary blends. There's a regulation on labeling that states that the highest amount of the ingredient has to be the first one. So this is a thing that's pretty popular in the bodybuilding world. It's you have people who have these pre-workout supplements, and the first ingredient is usually dextrose or creatine. There's something that's much, 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 much cheaper on the gram-for-gram basis than any of the active ingredients that they're chaining. And then, you know, you can technically have a little sprinkling of fairy dust into the vat, and then, oh yeah, cool, now this has, you know, super ingredient X. Right. But because we don't have any fillers, there's really like we don't disclose our specific ones. We could say it's over half branched chain amino acids, which, you know, specifically leucine is the first one of the ingredient. If you look in the research, leucine has one of the strongest effects, so we're not cheaping out anyone there. But the thing is that really there's you know, just looking at a pure economic perspective, our incentives are not aligned to try to cheap anyone out because, you know, we don't pay for advertising. We're really dependent on people who say this product works or doesn't, and word of mouth is incredibly important to us. Whereas, you know, some of the bigger, more funded companies out there, they have shareholders to answer to. You know, they hit quarterly goals, and, you know, a lot of times they're looking to cut ingredients as much as possible. So that's why you see these things. It's not that these are run by bad people. It's just that, you know, they have a certain amount of incentives to, you know, they probably care more about making sure that the people in their office are going to have, you know, be able to feed their kids tomorrow than, you know, some faceless consumer who, you know, we like to care about these consumers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you, man. Well, I definitely get the feeling you care, man. That's, yeah, that's resonating, definitely. As opposed to those big gorilla companies, right? Yeah, good stuff. Now, so 5 grams.
Mm-hmm. How many times a day?
We say take it half an hour before your training and immediately after. And then it's, of course, excluding the, you know, tablet chewing Ironman people on the West Coast. So.
Right. So 10 grams total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And during?
If it's a long workout, right? It's like, because like it's if we're pushing 4 hours of the cutoff, we say if it's longer than 4 hours, you should be looking to do something every 2 hours. But, I mean, for most people, it's a very special kind of person who trains more than that on a regular basis. So that's usually, you know, a peak run for the month or something like that. Another thing I want to keep in mind was that there's something you guys mentioned earlier that I wanted to address. We ended up doing a couple marathon events, and the first thing I usually ask when I'm at trade shows with people is, first, is soreness an issue for you? And two, do you take any supplements? And the thing that was kind of interesting to me was that, you know, I'm more of an outsider on the endurance market, but I don't understand how people can do something like run 20 or 30 marathons a year and not get sore. But you'd be amazed that the thing is that the people who are very experienced in the marathon thing, a lot of the times they, first off, they're super supplement phobic, and second of all, they don't really have issues with soreness. It's just over time, you're adapting to things. When I go to CrossFit, insane. These guys are doing something different every day, and I know you guys have your opinions on CrossFit, but and then triathlon, the same thing. Are you guys sore? You're like, when am I not sore, right? But, I mean, it's different because when you're looking at the whole muscles being used to different things, a lot of times, you know, I can't imagine what it's be like being a triathlete because I'm not one, but I could imagine it's, you know, it's sort of like spinning plates. Sometimes you're trying to get up on your bike and you're trying to maintain on your swim and your run, and then, you know, you're trying to maintain the other. So you're constantly in the state of changing gears and trying to get better and stuff. And that's why it's a good situation for people like that.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, with respect to that, all I'll say is, you know, every person is, you know, certainly an experiment of one. And there is an argument, I mean, just using an example of a prior podcast that we did with Ken Glaw, who's a very well-known name in Ironman circles for endurance sports travel, his company now, but the fact that he's probably done, I believe he's done close to 40 Ironmans. He's got a long history in Kona. Ken's a big advocate of a very high volume of training. You know, he does a lot of hours and believes that you need to. And for athletes that have the durability and the time to maintain a high volume of training, those folks aren't going to get sore from a 20-mile run if you're running, you know, if you're running 80 miles a week in addition to 20 hours of cycling and 40,000 yards of swimming. On the other hand, if you're looking at the typical age group triathlete who has a difficult time getting, you know, 10 hours of training in a week and they're trying to do three or four sports, they're always on some level of adaptation with respect to any one of those sports, running being the one that obviously potentially could cause the most injury because of gravity and ground reaction forces and all of that. So, it's different for every single person. And, you know, the marathoners that are blessed to be durable and can run a lot of miles without soreness or injury, quite honestly, are few and far between based on my experience. They may be the ones coming up and speaking to you, but, you know, 70 to 80% of recreational runners get injured in a calendar year. There's something to be said for consistency over time, but also the things we deal with in particular, moving well and staying strong and training in a smart way. Again, every person's different, you know, which is, again, one more reason to narrow down the variables and say, this is the thing that's helping me or not helping me to be better, more injury resistant, recover faster, feel better. Ultimately, it's about looking better on the beach, man. That's all that matters.
It's all about the bicep curls.
That's it, man. That's all it is. So, Doc, you got anything else for Jan?
About wraps it up.
All right, good stuff. Jan, thanks a lot for joining
really
us.
Really appreciate you making the time.
I mean, I think I believe that there may be something there for folks, depending on how their diets flush out. Certainly, you know, we didn't talk a lot about vegetarians, but some certainly folks who are not consuming, you know, animal products could be challenged with their protein intake. There may be something for those folks to consider and look at.
Probably not, though. This is probably an animal derivative, right?
Oh, no. It's definitely worth mentioning. Like I said, we're a completely different supply chain. This is non-animal origin, non-GMO, non-soy, not a lot of things.
Great information.
Yeah, that's very good information. Yeah, we were actually going to talk about the sourcing a little bit, but give our listeners a little bit more information about your company, where they can find out about where you are, and we'll go from there.
All right, awesome. So if you guys are interested in finding out anything about the product or reading my lovely blog, it's at vitalitysci.com. That's like Vitality Sciences with just SCI, so vitalitysci.com. And if you guys end up going through and checking out our shop page there, we actually have a special coupon code that we got made just for this listeners of the podcast. If you enter Pursuit Athletic at stage two checkout, that should be good for an 11% discount, which will get it down to $39.99 for you guys. So if you'd like to try it out, we have a money back guarantee. So we're really about this personal experimentation thing. So if you try it and it's anything else than what you expect, we're happy to take any returns or a full refund. So that's where we're
awesome. At. So Pursuit Athletic at checkout.
Yep.
11% discount brings the cost down to
$39.99.
And how many tablets?
That's going to be 100 tablets.
100 tablets. Very good. All right, Jan, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Doc, as always, we'll see you next time. Everybody, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. Have a great day. Ride safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, everybody.
See you guys.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to PursuitAthleticPerformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete